You're listening to the Seth Adam Podcast.
You can tell who the real ones are. They won't get you down. You can tell who the real ones are. They won't let you down.
All right, yes, this is the inaugural Seth Adam Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Adam. Today we welcome a very good friend, very prestigious musician from the New Haven area, Connecticut and beyond. Steve Rogers is with us here today. Woo! And this is the segment I like to call Full Disclosure. Full disclosure, I'm in Steve's band, and I've known him a very long time. It's almost like interviewing my brother.
Exactly.
So, Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, it's nice to be here.
You're our first guest.
I like your studio. It's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. I know a guy that gave me a lamp and some signs, helped me decorate.
Oh, man.
It was really good.
Well, we'll continue on that theme as your studio expands into new horizons.
All vibes, vibes. All right, first question. We're gonna dive right into this. Where is Steve Rogers right now? Spring 2019. So where are you right now? How is everything?
Where
are you in life?
Well, you know, I feel like I'm in the most whole, happy, and healthy place that I've been probably in easily 15 years, since around the time that I, maybe even longer than that, around the time that I got married, around the time that I opened the space, and for the first few years of the All Ages space when I owned that, I was, you know, very, very healthy and, you know, emotionally happy, and I sort of had the weight of the world on my shoulders for a long time, and you know, the weight of the world within my world. But I spent the last year getting really, really healthy and you know, eating right and learning how to cook right and spending quality time with good friends, as you know, and just really focused on making a lot of art outside of the box art, like fairy houses, and writing a lot of songs, you know, and as you know, because you played on it, the record has got finished, and I already have so many songs ready to record for the next one.
That's cool. That's good for me to know.
Now that you know that, let's get to it.
So you don't miss the past life too much, do you?
I'm very reverent about a lot of it, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, there's elements of it that I hold really dear to my heart. As far as I assume you're talking about, you know, running a 3-stage music circus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be it.
Right. So I don't, there are elements of it that I certainly don't miss, at all. And then, there's elements of it such as being able to connect with so many people all of the time. I really do miss, I miss that, like that connection that, you know, with so many people that would just come through the door, you know, and some of them were bands traveling from afar, and some of them were people that would come in, you know, 2 or 3 times a week or sometimes every night.
So you don't have that everyday connection anymore.
I don't have that everyday connection now. And that, I think that, you know, I sort of get a little wistful for that sometimes, like, I wish I still had that, that part of things. I certainly don't miss the,
stress
and burden,
yeah,
that came along with it. And there were, you know, there were a lot of difficult forces that made it really hard for me to, make it, continue to be the thing that, I originally had the vision for.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, as someone that was there for a little bit of that, for 3 years, three mm-hmm. and a half years or whatever, I can totally see a difference now. And, that's a good thing.
It is a good thing. I loved having a place that, I could make feel, like a comfortable, safe place for folks that maybe didn't have a comfortable, safe place.
That was the big attraction to it.
For me, it wasn't a bar. And I think for a lot of people, it wasn't just a bar where you go to, yeah, and grab a beer with a friend and, you know, cash out and check out.
It was a vibe.
Yeah.
It was a community.
Yep. It was. And you know, I'll always hold that community dear to my heart. You know, I'm sad that it doesn't really exist now. But
well, that's okay, though, I think.
Yeah.
If I may.
You may.
If I may. Because what I really want to do is focus on the future.
Absolutely.
We're just going to stay in the past for just one more question here. And it's really, we're going to start getting into music stuff.
Sure.
So I don't know if you remember the story. I think we've talked about it once before. But like one of my first gigs when I was in my Misconception band and like one of the first versions of it, I think it was like 1993. It was like at a Moose Lodge.
Everybody had a mullet.
And oh, I didn't have one.
You didn't. I might have.
But we shared a gig together when it was you and your brother, when you used to be only two.
Yep. Yep.
And somewhere in Wallingford, Moose Lodge or something in Wallingford.
Yeah, it was a thing. And there was a stage.
There was a stage. It was a big hall. So that's what I want to talk about. Outside of Mighty Purple, it was essentially you and your brother,
mm-hmm.
which developed into Mighty Purple,
mm-hmm.
which developed into
Mighty Purple.
Where does it go from there?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, my brother and I started writing songs when we were 11 and 12 years old. And then I got sent off to boarding school when I was 12 because I was a little rebel without a cause. And that's where
awesome.
that's where I really started. Yeah, I got sent to boarding school in Arden, North Carolina, to a school called Christ School, and it was everything you can imagine that it was.
Wow.
Yep. And I had a little cassette recorder, you know, the little rectangle box you'd slip the cassette into, and you could hit record. And I recorded my first four songs on that, and I still have that recording actually. You know, a studio engineer guy that I used to know transferred it onto a CD for me. So it's, you know, now I can put it up digitally, although I would not do that because it was before my voice cracked and I basically sound like a little kid with a guitar.
So it's like the early Jackson 5 is essentially.
Yeah. It was before I could dance though. you know, when I actually ran away from home when I was 12 years old, and that was when I was first writing songs. I ran away from home, away from boarding school, away from what I thought at the time was oppression, but it was really just love for my parents, you know, really started digging deep into writing songs. And my brother was my songwriting partner. You know, we used to sit down and have these songwriting sessions for hours. You know, I'd lay down on my belly and, you know, write with a pen and paper all these lyrics, and then you know, he would sort of arrange things and put them together. And then over the course of our late teens and into our early 20s, when we were touring all the time, you know, a couple hundred shows a year,
mm-hmm.
our you know, my writing and his writing, although we wrote together a whole lot, we started we started writing individually from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that was based on proximity because he and I stopped living together at you know, sometime in our early 20s. And so he started exploring, you know, the kinds of things he wanted to say and the vibe and expression through which he wanted to say it. And
mm-hmm.
I started you know, writing songs that were just really focused around me and a guitar, me and a piano. And then when the sort of 10-year version of Mighty Purple came to a close, with our original bass player, Adrian, and David Keith was playing drums with us for 4 years at that point. You know, we basically, I went into a whole time period where I just exploded and wrote so many songs, and I think some of it was due to depression. I mean, it was, you know, it was sort of like the classic, the band broke up and the girlfriend left me all in the same day and she took the dog and blah blah blah, and then I took the dog back, you know.
Yeah.
All of that sort of stuff.
So in the early days when it was just you, like you and your brother,
mm-hmm.
and you started writing songs around 11 or 12, did you grow up in a musical household? Like, what was influencing you
there were always
it was just like an automatic vehicle where it's like, oh hey, I can kind of focus and kind of vehicle my thoughts and my passions into this songwriting thing. Like, what made you want to do that? What made you want to pick up a guitar and start singing? Well, or was it just looking cool?
No, it wasn't. Maybe there was a time when I was 10 years old where we sort of, before I could even play guitar or an instrument, where I hung a white bedroom sheet up over the swing set and took band promo pictures with, you know, my brother and sister and two neighbor kids, and we called ourselves Red Spot.
Yeah, so that was before only
that
two.
That was long before, and you know that's before I understood instruments. Although we grew up, my brother and I grew up in a household. My dad, obviously, you know this, but others don't. My dad was a pastor of a church in New Haven for 25 years, and I like to refer to my parents. My dad's first marriage with my mom, obviously. I like to refer to them as church folkies because, he came from a very traditional church background, and then he would sort of pull out the guitar, you know, during communion time and sort of play, you know, he and my mom would play together during church. And,
so it was almost kind of progressive in a way.
It was. At the time.
For the time. Yeah.
Yep. Definitely. They were like church hippies basically.
Oh, well that makes a lot of sense.
So there was always a guitar in the corner.
That makes sense.
Yep. Yeah. And we were encouraged to play them. And, you know, the guitar I learned on is a 12 string, huge body 12 string that my dad had in 1970. Somebody gave it to him in 1978. And that was the guitar that sat around, and I learned how to tune it and play it. And so I think if you can learn on a very difficult, you know, to master chords on a 12 string for an 11 or 12 year old, you know, switching over to a Sears electric guitar after that is a lot easier.
Oh yeah, I mean, when I first started playing guitar, it was all about learning it on acoustic guitar because my guitar teacher at the time told me that if you ever make a jump to electric, it's going to be so much easier because your fingers are
ready. Exactly. Yeah.
So the time was probably mid 80s, late 80s, about?
Late 80s when I was really first starting to write songs with my brother and then it was early 90s. It was probably 19. It was 1990 when we played our first show in a club outside of like the middle school cafeteria or something, you know. My mom would put us, you know, let us get into her Volkswagen Beetle with our two matching Dean Z guitars and our little PV Rage amps.
Oh, the PV Ragers.
And put it in the trunk of the Volkswagen Bug, which of course was in the front of the car.
Trunk was in the front. Yep.
And she'd drive us down to places like the Brick and Wood Cafe, you know, really yummy, juicy, I think mobster owned, you know, I think moonlighted as a naughty club some nights, you know what I mean? So she would drive us all over to these places, and people that didn't think that she was our mother because she looked so young. So it was like, every sound guy and
she's our manager.
Yeah, every sound guy
and momager.
Exactly. Yeah, she definitely made some friends around town. I think that you know, and some of those friends we still have. You know, they're like lifelong friends.
That's a great connection.
Yeah, definitely.
So then, you're listening to folk music as a kid. For the most part, and church music.
Mostly folk music. I didn't even know what church music was other than sort of like, you know, I don't really remember what the church folky songs were necessarily, except, you know, I don't remember what those, you know, but there was a lot of Sit, Stand, Kneel organ stuff going on. So that was sort of part of my traditional upbringing because we lived in Oxford, England and Cambridge, England. You know, my dad went to college there. And so my earliest memories of music were sort of like the King's College, you know, men's choir, boys choir, just beautiful choir in a cathedral with all this huge reverb. And
so how did you make the connection from that to like a rock band, I guess is what I'm asking.
Well,
because I mean, we both kind of like came about our way in the early 90s.
Yep.
Like many of us around here did. And, but I didn't think of you guys as a 90s band, but that was when everybody was kind of like allowed to blossom, because everything blossomed then. Like I always tell people, the 90s were such a great time because all of a sudden the underground metal bands were popular. The underground hip hop bands became popular, and the stuff that was like, even the cheesiest pop, like just the floodgates to open and you could do anything.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
Become anything.
Yep.
So mm-hmm. How did you go from church choir music or folk music to like being a rock band? Like what lit the fire under you? What inspired you?
Well, first of all, a lady at our church came up and handed me an electric guitar, which ended up being my first electric guitar, which was a Flying V. You know, and so, and right around that same time, somehow I had acquired Bon Jovi's Slippery When Wet on cassette.
It's classic.
Yep. And so, and then somehow the songbook from that same album, you know, sort of ended up in my room. I don't even really know, because when I first started writing songs, I had a completely shaved head. I wore fatigues to church. I wore fatigues to school. I was a junior Marine of America. I thought I wanted to join the ROTC and become a Marine and go and fight for our country and all these things. And you know what it was? It was right after my parents got divorced, and I think I was about 10 or 11 years. I was 11 years old, and my uncle, who was this sort of like, he still is, I'm sure, but I haven't talked to him in years. He showed up in my mom's driveway with everything he owned in the back of this beat up 1960s station wagon, and he handed me and my brother Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band on cassette,
yes.
And said, "I want you to learn every single song on this album," which I never did. But then, but then he brought his guitar inside, and it was an acoustic guitar, but it was a Washburn from the early 1900s. And the whole face of the body was mother of pearl inlaid, and it was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen. And so he taught us how to play our first chords in that couple of days that he was there, and then he disappeared off into the universe. But I think we saw him one other time ever when we were out on tour in San Francisco.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, he's a wild character. He was in the Washington, D.C. Symphony Orchestra as a teenager, like this child prodigy guitar player. And who knows? Who knows where he is now? I don't know. Mexico, maybe?
Wow.
That was the rumor.
So he disappeared across the universe.
So he taught us he taught me and my brother our first chords. And then, you know, my mom was living out in this farm in West Haven, actually. And, you know, that's a place where I ended up living with my mom and with her significant other. Who became a whole nother mother to me. and on that farm, my brother and I were allowed to express ourselves, and my sister, we were allowed to express ourselves. We were allowed to go out into, you know, the greenhouse or the barn and plug our amp in and turn it up as loud as we want, you know, any time of the day. We weren't bothering anybody. And we just started writing songs. And at first, some of those songs were really cheesy. You know, I think we went to this summer camp on Martha's Vineyard, and my brother and I met this girl, and we both had a crush on her, and her name was Carrie. And I think we, well, you know, it was so innocent, you know, 10 and 11 or 11 and 12 years old, you know, but we wrote the first song we ever wrote together. I remember it. It was called Carrie, I Love You. And I mean,
Wow. Golly,
you know, I mean, you know, you don't forget it when you write your first song with your brother, I guess. You know, it was a silly little song. And I think that we played it. After I ran away from boarding school, my brother and I ended up at this little Catholic school in the East Rock neighborhood at the time, called St. Stanislaus.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which is right down there on State Street. And that's where we met our original bass player, Adrian. John was in the fifth grade, and I remember my brother was pretty devastated because, you know, we had all been in the same schools together, and I think, you know, through our parents' separation and everything, and, you know, sort of being young and in a new place, I think my brother was really upset and may have been crying on his first day of school. And this kid came up to him and said, "Hey, man, it's okay. I'll be your friend."
Oh, wow.
And that turned out to be Adrian Vandegraaff, who at the time, none of us played instruments at the time. So, you know, over the next couple of years, as we got to be, you know, really close with Adrian and his brother who didn't play instruments, but, you know, we would sit around in Adrian's room and we just started really digging into records. Adrian's dad, you know, was very open, and Adrian lived with his mom, but his dad would buy him all kinds of records. So, you know, we started listening to The Police and Led Zeppelin.
So you got a lot of it from that.
A lot of it came from Adrian. And his older brother listened to the samples a lot for, you know.
Oh, wow.
So
that's a name you don't hear very often.
No, especially not in my house, but that's a whole other story. We used to go up on Adrian's rooftop. It was only a few blocks from your studio right here. Mm. And we'd sort of like sneak smoking our first cigarettes sneak maybe looking at things we shouldn't have looked at. And we used to bring our guitars up there and play overlooking the East Rock neighborhood. You know, it was like a three-story apartment building, so we could see everything around us tops of the other houses. And one day, this really strange dude, his name was Ron Wolf, and why I remember that, I'll never know, but me and my brother had our little beater guitars up on the roof, our first guitars, and we were playing, smoking cigarettes. And this guy appeared out of nowhere with a guitar and handed it to Adrian and said, "You got to be in the band too."
Oh.
So I'm not quite sure how it evolved into Adrian playing bass, but, you know, we just always played music together from a very young age.
So that's where you got, you know, into some of the more like rockish stuff.
That's where we
transitioned
a little bit. Yep.
So we're going to skip over Mighty Purple years because.
Sure. Mighty Purple. We toured for 10 years, 250 shows a year. We lived in a camper together. Yay.
It was fun. It was a good time.
Bunch of albums. Yeah, it was cool.
So now you're essentially out establishing yourself as a solo artist, correct?
A solo artist, but with lots of friends. And this album, I guess it does appear that to me, you know, I guess it appears to sort of be like, oh, you know, Steve's coming out as a solo artist. Basically, so many of the songs on the album that is coming out now were just so personal. Just, you know, I needed to sort of exercise them out of my mind, my body,
sure.
and my spirit.
I get that.
You know,
so let's talk about that.
But I'm hoping to collaborate and do some co-songwriting with you, for instance. I'm talking to some other folks about doing some co-songwriting. I love having like a. Like a community of people around. It's always been mm-hmm. what I love. So I don't know. I just want to bring people together that maybe don't know each other and do some, you know, do some real collaborative playing and I think that'll be fun.
So what is Count It All Joy about, and when is it coming out officially? Give me a synopsis of Count It All Joy.
All right. Well, the album comes out April 19th at the State
House. April 19th, that's the official street date.
In New Haven, yep,
okay.
That's the street date. The internet date is probably going to be the 20th or 21st.
Okay.
You know, I'm not in charge of all that, so we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Count It All Joy. Essentially, Count It All Joy, it's a reference to a Bible passage that I sort of found comfort in over the last year or so. You know, when I made the very difficult transition from, you know, being a circus ringleader to sort of being stay-at-home dad, trying to find my next voice. I wasn't even sure if I could still play music, you know, because I'd had so much disappointment wrapped up in you know, the ending seasons of the Spaces, mm-hmm. respectively. And, you know, and I also didn't have a voice at the time. You know, I couldn't physically sing. And I also had to be very quiet when I was speaking. And there were weeks that I wasn't allowed to speak at all until after I had throat surgery. And I just spent a whole year getting really healthy. You know, I'm so thankful after, you know, years of being, you know, a cigarette smoker, not to smoke cigarettes, you know, you know, that poison's not in my system anymore, which is wonderful.
That's great.
And I started being really conscious about everything I was eating, what I was drinking. It's funny. After owning a craft beer bar for 7.5-8 years, I might have a couple of beers a month, maybe.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's hilarious. Well,
I mean, at that point, you've had them all.
Well, I'm good. I already tried what I need to try.
There isn't going to be any revolutionary, groundbreaking beer. There might be some breweries opening, but I mean, it's not.
No, we've covered the styles.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But count it all joy comes from this Bible verse in the New Testament, which is you know, my favorite part of the Bible. It basically says, you know, no matter what trials and tribulations you might go through, count all those trials and tribulations joy, because it builds your faith and your perseverance and your character, you know, for your future.
Also, just a great lesson in life to carry around too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like using your negatives as a means to build on your positives.
Yep, absolutely. And it took me some time to get through that. You know, it wasn't just I found this Bible verse. Everything's better now. Well, yay.
Full disclosure again. I mean, I remember I was kind of witnessing part of that. So with those challenges in mind, how did the process play out of actually writing the songs? Did you just kind of like hum melodies in your head when you're playing guitar?
I did actually. I heard.
And remember everything?
Yep. I did. Or sometimes I'd just sit at the piano and I'd hear a melody and I'd
just play it on the piano.
I'd maybe hum it very quietly. I could hear it in my head, just play it on piano. And voice memos is my most used app on my phone.
And what, speaking of that process, what's your process? I mean, I get to ask this a lot all the time. Like, do you write the music first? Do you write the lyrics first? And I always tell people it's always different.
It's always different.
So it's always different for you too.
Yeah. I mean, there's some songs, literally, I don't even know how it happens. And you probably don't either as a songwriter.
It just comes out.
Yeah. You're sitting on the couch one night, your dogs are asleep. You know, the world's at peace with itself. It might be 2 a.m. and, you know, the rerun of the news is over. And, you know, all of a sudden, everything that's going on in your life sort of floods into your mind and floods into your heart. And it just comes out, you know, like splatter on paper. And other times I'll have, you know, some sort of, you know, guitar riff thing that, you know, that I'm working on that, you know, ends up flowing for a while and then I put it down and I can't find anything to that and
shelf it for a while.
It goes on a shelf and then I might be driving down the road and it'll come into my brain
and it just connects.
Yep. It connects to a thought or a word or,
well,
or,
kind of
or an experience.
Plays into my next question, actually. Do you find that your guitar parts dictate what you play or what you sing, and vice versa? Do you find that your singing dictates what you play on guitar?
Both. You know, there's times if I have a guitar pass that I've written or a guitar pass that I've been messing around with on the couch for a while or whatever. You know, I start to hear a melody to it over the course of time or sometimes all at once. Or sometimes it's funny. A lot of people listen to music at home. A lot of musicians listen to music at home. And now I do listen to music at home.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm doing things like cooking and cleaning out my chicken coop and building a chicken coop or, you know, or making art, I actually don't listen to anything. And I just, I just start singing in my head or out loud. A lot of the time I'll just, you know, I built, you know, for instance, I built a shed last fall and my kids helped me my daughter helped me for, you know, 35 or 40 hours. We had agreements, you know, if you help me with this, you can get this, you know what I right. mean? Without complaining.
Bartering. But
my daughter actually just did it out of the goodness of her heart and she learned to use power tools. So great. You know, but she kept catching me and being like, Dad, you're always singing when you're, and I'm like, yeah, these are like songs that are in my head that, you know, that I'm building. So
like kind of subconsciously trying to flesh them out.
Yep.
Or consciously
there it's subconscious. It's not even conscious. Like, sometimes I'll notice when I build miniatures. So I'll sit down in my little workshop and be building miniatures. And then I'll notice, okay, it's been totally good. There's no music on, you know, for the last like 2 hours. And I've just been singing things in my head, you know. And sometimes it'll be like, you know, different songs get stuck in your head and that, you know, other people's songs. But most of the time I'm just kind of like, you know, writing melodies in my head at the same time as I'm painting little people that are an inch tall.
I'm very selfish. I'm asking that for myself because I kind of do the same thing. Like I'll be washing dishes or
walking dogs,
dogs or something. I'm just like, I have these three lines and I'm like, I got to do something with them, but I'm not even thinking that I have to do something with them. They're just in my head and I just like sing them out loud. And then maybe that fourth line is going to come and I'm like, oh, cool. And I wasn't even trying, you know, like it just kind of happened, which is, I like the spontaneity of when a song comes together without trying to force it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I don't like forcing it at all. And actually when I'm driving around, that's one of the times I almost never listen to anything in the car. In fact, today I was writing and I was driving with my wife and usually I just drive, you know, cause I have this car thing where I have to drive. But today I was,
I know all about it.
You do. Oh yeah. We've traveled together, of course. And we'll travel together again. I do trust you as a driver. It's not you, it's me. but we're driving and I just started writing. And she had like, please turn that off. I can't, you know, I can't focus. So, you know, I love the quiet. I love peace and quiet.
Do you have any favorite songs on this new record? It's always a hard question to answer.
It is. They're all personal in different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, as you know, because you've been involved in this whole process, you know, there's half of the album was written in the last season of the space, you know, sort of in the mm-hmm. last couple of years of the spaces. And then, you know, the other ones were written sort of, you know, in the 6 months following the endings. There's.
And one like in the last week, right? The very last song.
Oh yeah. No. Yeah. All the, yeah.
It'll be a treat for the listeners when they finally hear the record.
Yeah. It's cool. You know, so that song, for instance, the song that, you know, I sort of wrote as we were like, wait, stop the presses.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, that song was about those quiet moments sitting in my backyard, building natural material, miniature houses and just being in nature and having, you know, birds fly across my nose. You know, we have bird feeders all over the yard. So there's just birds everywhere all the time. And if you sit still enough, they don't know you're there.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun. That song's about, you know, sort of being at peace with nature and at peace with your heart and at peace with your spirit and your mind. And so that, you know, that song was special to me in that way. You know, there were a couple of songs, on the album that were also special because of other things. You know, there's one, the Lessons That I've Learned song that there was a video for.
Mm-hmm.
That was when I was first getting healthy, and it was kind of like almost a cry to myself, like, come on, you gotta, you know, you can do it, get healthy.
I remember when that song came together. And I kind of felt that it was almost a song to yourself,
mm-hmm.
like exactly what you're saying. Like, you got to do this. You can do this.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I've learned over the past stressful some odd years.
Well,
the music circus.
There was a time when at the closing seasons of the Spaces where I just felt like I wanted to give up entirely, you know, mm-hmm. and you know, on everything. I just, you know, I felt really let down and sort of like I poured my whole heart into this thing, and really art and music, songs and art and community and family is what healed me, all those four elements together. And that's what I see sort of like as you know, as my next future, as my next future exploration is just combining community, art, music, food. And I love having my family with me. For instance, my family's going with me to Honduras this year.
Yeah.
You know, and that should be an adventure. You know, we're going down to do art and music with kids, and that's going to be awesome.
So is this like a second life for you, or is this kind of a continuation of where you left off, I guess, in terms of pre-club ownership?
This is a brand new life for me.
Brand new life.
I really, while I'm very connected to who I was in my youth, in sort of a, it's almost like I can sort of look at it like that wasn't me. You know what I mean? It was mm-hmm. like such another lifetime ago that I'm like, okay, well that, you know, I was that guy. You know, wow, cool, okay. And then, you know, then I did this whole, you know, three-stage music circus thing, and that sort of, in some ways, changed me for the good, and in some ways, didn't change me for the good, or changed me in ways that were not useful in my life,
or didn't expect to,
and I didn't expect it to, and one day I just woke up and I was like, well, dang, you know, this is not what I signed up for here,
right?
You know what I mean? And you know, a lot of forces were changing it into something else that it. Who knows, you know? And so this is a completely new adventure for me. And I mean, I literally feel like I just popped out of the womb a year ago and here I am.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. Right. Right.
You know,
I feel that way too sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you as a guy, I mean, you know, that I've known a long time, you know, your whole, everything is so, so much different than you were when you were younger, you know?
Sure.
You know, like, you know, you have a wonderful wife and daughter and you know.
I do? When did that happen?
Oh, dude.
So let's talk about the April 19th show. This is going to be at the State House, which is located on State Street in New Haven, Connecticut, for any of those wondering
but you've
where
gotta,
that is.
You've got to look for it because I don't even think they have a sign out on the street
yet. It is a little... It's the State House Presents, correct, I think?
It's just called the State House.
No, I mean the website is the State House Presents.
Yeah, the website's the State House Presents.
State House Presents.
But
you can go to steveofficialmusic.com. There's a link to the show there.
Yep.
But tell us about the show a little bit.
So the show is exciting because a lot of musicians that I really respect are going to be there playing with me, yourself included. And also sharing their own songs, yourself included. And it's going to be a really healing show for me. There's some elements to it that night that I think, will be healing for a few people that are involved actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect, that there'll be a bunch of people there that I haven't seen for a while. And so, you know, that'll be an exciting and comfort all at the same time, an exciting comfort.
Are you looking at this more of like a launch of the new life?
That's exactly what it is. It's sort of like the first, you know, it's sort of the first day of like me saying, hi, I'm, you know, this is what I'm doing now. You know,
right.
I'm not Steve from Mighty Purple. I'm not Steve, the, you know, three venue club owner.
But that's it. That's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah. You're
not Steve from Mighty Purple anymore. And you're not Steve from The Space anymore.
Right. But all those things have, you know, have a big part in who I am today.
Sure. Part of your DNA.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily defining you, but especially
I'm
not,
absolutely not defining me. And I'm very excited to share new songs with people. I think there's a lot of joy, a lot of healing, a lot of love in this batch of songs. Not that there weren't those elements in, you know, some of the Mighty Purple stuff of past. But this has a whole new thing to it.
Right.
To just be able to stand on stage with a bunch of people that I really respect and be able to play music with them is also going to be, you know, really amazing. You know, for instance, I'm going to do one song, that's just me and my friend Natalie. She's in Israel right now, so we're sort of texting voice memos back and forth, you know. But we're just going to do, you know, she's sharing a couple of her own songs earlier in the night, and then we're just going to do one song that's, you know, we've been getting together a bit and writing a little music, and that's been really healing and fun. She was somebody who was very involved in the in all three spaces over the years.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Big time.
And other things around town. So you know, she's a good friend and we have a long history, and I'm excited that she's involved and as well as a bunch of others, yourself included, sir. And then we're closing out the night with a Mighty Purple reunion, which sort of you know, this will be the first time that I've been on stage, that all four of us have been on the stage at the same time, probably since late 1999. So we're talking 20 years since this lineup's been on stage together.
Wow. And everybody's been active.
Everybody's been active. You know, proximity again, you know, it's hard to stay active, you know, doing Mighty Purple reunions when one of the founding members lives 3,000 miles away.
Right. Right.
And when one of the other members, you know, tours all over Europe in castles wearing lederhosen or whatever he does.
I know that guy.
Oh, you know that guy. Yes, you sure do. You know, and our friend from, you know, elementary school, Adrian, it's just going to be a joy to be back on stage with him as well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a really great night. I'm really excited for it, not just because I'm playing, but I think I'm more happy for you.
There's a collective of musicians, you know, that I'm definitely sort of aligning with right now, yourself included. And there's a couple that you have in your little quiver too, a couple arrows in your quiver that are pretty amazing people, like Jeff Burnham.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that are awesome.
He's a good dude.
You know, I've just started to get to know this guy named Spencer Lucky, who I think he's a really just a wonderful guy. And you know, he plays pedal steel.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Very, very well.
And it's a jam.
And
sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll happen sooner than you think. and a few other elements too. You know, so we'll see what goes on that night, but I think it's going to be special and wonderful, and I'm, you know, I'm certainly ready to sort of, you know, launch my whole new thing, and you know, the whole count it all joy theme, you know, it sort of resounds through all the songs, and you know, also resounds through, you know, some of the sort of marketing stuff I've put together behind it, like all the t-shirts and things like that.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I want to be able to really just share love and joy with people. And, you know, if I can spread that through music and going out on the road and you know, doing everything from little house concerts to, you know, being able to share the stage and with, you know, folks that have really, you know, built an audience for a long time, then that will be a lovely thing to do.
It sounds like you have a lot planned.
There's a lot left
to accomplish.
Yep, there's a lot that I want to do. I mean, I'm throwing myself into doing this project, not just for myself, but just for a whole community of people. And I know that some of these songs, I think, can really, I think they can really mean some things to some people who maybe have sort of lost touch with hope out there. And so that's what I want to bring, you know, to the table is
bring some joy and
some joy and hope.
Right.
You know, and I, even when I go out on the road, I'm hoping to go and play like maybe some hospitals during the day, you know?
Yeah.
You know, just go and do it. I'm, you know, I don't need to get paid to go do that sort of thing. Just go and, yeah, I just want to go and bring joy to people. You know, I had this experience in the last week. I had a close friend who passed away after a long struggle. On his last day of life, I went and played songs for him for 3 hours at his bedside. And death in hospitals really freak me out. Like the whole thing just freaks me out, you know? And I've never been good at it. So I braved up and I drove up to see him in North Connecticut at a hospital, and he passed away the next day. And I was just so thankful that I was able to share songs of joy with him.
That's beautiful. Are you up for a few more questions?
Oh, I'm here, man. I'm
part of the focus of this show that I want to do is basically bring New Haven-centric, Connecticut-centric people, real people, and hopefully somehow give them another voice or bring things to people that might not know about Steve Rogers, for example, and maybe turn them on through my own connections and through my own avenues and stuff.
Absolutely.
And but something I want to ask different people, whether they're musicians or business owners or politicians or whatever, and this is probably a long question. So, you know, you and I have a lot of conversations about the world. What is your take on the state of the world right now? And not necessarily from a political standpoint, but it can be if you want. Where do you think, and I think this is a relatively important question for you as someone that wants to bring joy into people's lives, because as musicians, I almost feel a responsibility to help lift people up.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's kind of, I write from personal perspectives.
Same.
But I do it in a way, I'm not trying to get attention for myself. I'm trying to maybe be a voice, a vehicle for somebody else. And even if it's like just to get their frustrations out, maybe it's an angry rock song or something like that or whatever, but just overall sense of bringing joy and some kind of acceptance and love into people's lives
mm-hmm.
due to the extremely strange state of the world. So I hope I didn't steal any of your thunder with that.
Not at all.
But what's your take on it all?
Well,
in 30 seconds or less.
Right, right. Well, I think there's a massive lack of humility, where our leadership is. I think that our leadership is dreadfully prideful and selfish and self-serving. I believe that through music and through the next generation, through music and art and expression and writing in the next generation that's going to come after us, they're going to be the ones who are going to make the huge change in the world. In my opinion, I think. Our kids' generation are going to be the ones who finally are able to say enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think that they are seeing the world right now and going, wait, this is totally not cool. This is bogus. Let's turn this around. I mean, you know, there's elements of that we've seen with high school kids. You know, I think the most important movement that's happening in our country right now is the high school kids saying no more violence,
right?
No, you know, just let's just love each other. And I think that's what they're out there saying. They're not saying it in any angry way. They're saying it in a please, let's unite, let's love each other, let's not have any more of this violence. And I think the older generation are, especially the ones who you know are sort of in charge of things, unfortunately, right now, you know, have just gotten to the point where they're just very self-serving.
Mm-hmm.
not the whole older generation. I'm saying our leadership, you know, some of our leadership. And I think it's going to take a massive amount of love to combat that. I also think that, and I've done a lot of thinking about this. I was raised in a household, you know, by many, many more women than men. and I believe that women are going to be the ones who initially make huge changes in this world.
I agree.
You know, I was talking about my friend Natalie before. She actually, lives in Israel part-time, and she manages an artist named Yel, who, basically, came up with this song called the Prayer. She wrote a song called Prayer of the Mothers, and she basically, got a whole bunch of Palestinian and Israeli women together to march through the streets and just say, enough of this, you dumb boys, you know, let's unite and fix this world. And she's a beautiful artist. I think that her voice is going to be one of those voices that, you know, is a rocket needle in the air. And I'm hoping that there's a lot more voices like hers that emerge. I hope that I can be a small part of it, you know, you know, but I think women are going to make a huge change in the world, not through anger, but, through truth and through humility and justice.
Very beautiful. Is there anything else that you would like to, have people know about you?
You know, I like to cook. I like to have a lot of people around. You know, I'm hoping to do a whole bunch of like pop up dinner parties and house concerts and involve as many of. I think it would be fun to bring like a little caravan of friends along, like yourself and a few others, and go and do these like, you know, pop up music, art, food, community events, you know, in different odd, interesting locations. Yeah. And I'm also, if anybody's into fairy houses, I'm building a fairy house for the Florence Griswold fairy house exposition this year.
Cool.
It should be interesting. It's outside of my box.
And as someone who has seen these constructions, they're absolutely stellar. They're beautiful.
I want to make a full-size one where we could just like, you know, it could be like a practice room.
That would be cool. I was going to say music venue, but you don't want to do that.
No, I'm good on that. we'll leave that to, you know, the competitive at heart.
All right, everybody. So Steve Rogers and Friends, Friday, April 19th at the State House in New Haven, Connecticut.
Yippee.
Tickets are still on sale, but they're probably going to go fast. So make sure you get your tickets there. $15?
Yeah, 15 in advance. 15 in 20 advance. At the door or something.
So
like
just get
that.
Them in advance. Please be sure to visit steveofficialmusic.com on the interwebs.
Interwebbies.
And Steve, thanks for joining.
Hey,
joining us here today.
Love being here.
It's been terrific. Hope you had fun. And we will see you again soon.
Yay, goals.
All right, so that was Steve Rogers putting out a new record called Count It All Joy. It's going to be available for the first time on Friday, April 19th at the State House in New Haven, Connecticut, and that's going to be a record release party. You can catch me performing this week on Wednesday, April 10th at New England Brewing Company in Woodbridge, Connecticut, and on Friday, April 12th, I'll be doing a duo show with my friend David Keith at the Penny Lane Pub in Old Saybrook, Connecticut. And then this Saturday, April 13th, I'll be doing a full band show at Cafe 9 for my record release party for East Rock Remixed and Remastered. Stephanie Austin will be kicking things off, followed by Jesse Gimble, who's on tour from Philadelphia. And we'd love to see you. I hope you can make it. Join us next week. We'll be joined by Jenna Villano and Dan Lyon from the Hive Hair Studio right here in New Haven, Connecticut. We're going to talk about life in the city and being a business owner in a big town. If you have any questions, please visit us at SethAdamPodcast.com. Everybody, have a great week. Be kind to one another. Cheers.
You can tell who the real ones are.